Hello, podcasters. We're so glad that you've tuned in today. We got a great show for you today, Mueller. The Mueller report is, I mean, does it get any better than this? Yeah, they're tossing oatmeal at each other right off the bat. We'll give you some highlights of that. Also, Tom Fitton, the complaint against Ilhan Omar over fraud. He's making a strong case, this guy from Judicial Watch, and he has filed papers now for the House to look into to all of this. Also, David Steinberg, one of the guys who's been working on this story for over a year now, an update on the Ilhan Omar case, getting ready for our big show at 5 p.m. on The Blaze. If you've missed it, just subscribe to The Blaze, blazetv.com/Glenn. Use the promo code Glenn20, and you're going to be able to save $20. But make sure you do it now. Also, Justin Haskins, the $15 minimum wage, Bernie Sanders, Elizabeth Warren. It's an hysterical part of the program today. And back to Ilhan Omar with the BDS movement and her tweets, all on today's podcast.
You're listening to the best of the Glenn Beck program.
So we have we're just covering the Mueller report and the questioning of Robert Mueller, and this is now a question. Let's bring this up. This is Hank Johnson.
Oh, correct. And in fact, Don McGahn advised
quite possibly the dumbest congressman we have.
Just saying something.
Yeah, it is. Yeah, there's a lot of dumb.
Isn't that true?
I refer to the report on that episode.
Well, page 85 of volume 2 speaks to that. And also, Director Mueller, DOJ ethics officials confirmed that you had no conflicts that would prevent you from serving as special counsel. Isn't that correct?
That's correct.
But despite Don McGahn and the Department of Justice guidance, around May 23rd, 2017, the president, quote, prodded McGahn to complain to Deputy Attorney General Rosenstein about these supposed
conflicts. Reading from the report.
Yeah, he's just reading from the report. These aren't real questions.
McGahn declined to call
again, which I'm bummed because he is so good when he asks questions. If you remember, when Hank Johnson from Georgia, by the way, what the hell is going on with Georgia politics? Cynthia McKinney, Johnson, the woman who earlier this week was like, the guy told me to go back home, which was completely untrue. Now they have the videotape showing that everything she said was bogus.
It's not great.
Oh, it's amazing.
It's great.
It's amazing.
Stuff.
By the way, you can keep the Hank Johnson questioning up. We're just going to keep monitoring this in case anything exciting happens.
Well, in case the whole committee tips over and capsizes.
That's what Hank Johnson, that's what he said in committee. He was asking a general about sending more troops to Guam. We have it? Oh, play this.
Good.
I love
it. My fear is that the whole island will become so overly populated that it will tip over and capsize.
Listen to this, General.
We don't anticipate that.
the greatest response of all time.
Of all time. Of all time. Do you know how islands work, sir?
Because it was still respectful, and yet, at the same time, relayed how ridiculous the question was.
It's not like a floaty in a pool that can just travel around. I don't know if you know that.
Can we talk about the another development here with Hank Johnson? Did he have like a tube in his throat in like a recent surgery or something
or massive shaving problem?
Did he have a shaving incident? Because it looks like he cut himself shaving and still has the paper towel under his chin. Watch when he looks up.
No, he does.
Is that what it is?
I think it is.
You can kind of see it a little bit.
Yeah, a little bit. But when he looks up, watch him look up. There he is. He's like, I got toilet paper stuck to my neck.
That first weekend phone call that Don McGahn,
I mean, you fire your entire staff after this, if this is what this is. It could be something we don't know about, medical issue or something.
With our luck, it was something he was in the hospital getting a blood transfusion last night, and then this will all be Twitter going, look at how insensitive, they just hate him because he's black.
Well, that is why we mentioned, of course, that it could legitimately be something medical that I don't know about, but it does appear to be. That he just cut himself shaving.
A little shaving accident. Yeah.
Well, maybe he was shaving on an island that was in the middle of capsizing.
Oh.
Possible.
Sometimes when you move your arm to one side or the other of the room, and that room just starts to move a little bit,
exactly.
You got to be careful while you're shaving.
Well, I don't shave on planes. We learned that from the documentary Airplane. Back
Not
in the
a documentary, but I appreciate that. By the way, tonight at 5 o'clock, you got to join us, Pat. You got to be.
Is this the Ilhan Omar thing?
Yeah.
Yeah.
It is really going to be a good special tonight.
I bet.
We have an hour-long special on.
Do you delve into the. Or maybe you don't want to give this away.
No, go ahead.
Do you delve into the marriage with the brother?
Oh, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. We're trying to explain, what this controversy is, because most people are like, this can't be true. What's about this? He married your brother. What is this? And so we explain what all of the controversies are,
okay,
from her all the way back to Somalia to today. And we are also giving all of the evidence that has been found. And I think it's enough to call a grand jury.
I have been absolutely dumbfounded by the fact that nobody has been able to, maybe until tonight, has been able to follow up on this. She married her brother for immigration purposes, and nobody can actually track that down.
Well, we're
or
not
get
sure.
Her, get an
how
answer
can that
from
be?
Her.
Yeah.
Yeah. How could it be?
Because she won't answer the question.
But
there is no birth certificate because Somalia was such a nightmare. Okay. So there was no birth certificate. So you just have to take and piece together what she says, what he says, follow the pictures, follow the immigration. And what they said when they were coming in.
So there's no records of that family in Somalia?
No.
Wow. Yeah.
Well, it's a civil war, right?
Yeah, it's a civil war.
It's not in a refugee camp.
We had one, too, and we still have records.
Sure. It's possible we had a more developed government than Somalia even then.
It's not unusual for not to have birth certificates. And it's really important that we don't make this into a birth certificate thing.
Right.
Because it's not. We're not questioning how she got here. We know how she got here.
But there's potential illegal activity there.
There's illegal activity that seems pretty likely on how she got in. The family was broken in half. Half went to England under one name. The other half came here under the Omar name. And then we have all of the photographic evidence. You're just going to have to decide for yourself. It's enough to be able to go now and say to a grand jury, you need to investigate this, because there's a felony on entrance. There's possible felonies on lying about who people are for educational purposes, for discounts, fraud. There is a felony of her tax forms where she was, I mean, incredible. There's 28 tickets and citations that she and her husband / brother received in this time period, where they state their address, and their address is the same address where her quote ex-husband lived. So it looks like she was living with her quote new husband, most likely brother.
Right.
With the husband.
So it was supposedly divorced.
It was bigamy.
Yeah.
No, she didn't divorce.
Well, didn't she at one point divorce him?
No, she said, yes, in the Muslim tradition.
Right, okay.
Okay,
yeah,
so she married him in the Muslim tradition.
Right.
And what's really strange is most people don't know this.
She's
here
back
she is
to being married to him again.
Correct.
Too.
But when she married her brother or whoever this guy is, she married with a Christian pastor. Now, why would a devout Muslim who wears a hijab and a devout Muslim male marry with a Christian pastor?
Why indeed?
Diversity. That's why.
I mean, there's just a lot of stuff like that that's just bizarre.
Yeah.
Just totally bizarre. But there are, I believe, crimes, serious crimes. And the Minneapolis...
Impeachable crimes?
Oh, yeah. Jail crimes.
Yeah.
Felonies.
Yeah.
Not high crimes and misdemeanors. Actual felonies. You don't have to have an opinion on this. If these things are true, she should be going to prison.
And, Pat, you definitely want to watch this special tonight, right?
I definitely want to.
Oh, okay. You should use Glenn20 as your promo code then when you sign up at blazetv.com. You'll save
$20. Wow. That's unusual.
$20. It is unusual. It's twice the amount of the normal savings.
Wow. That's great.
And that's good today?
It's good today. Glenn20, G-L-E-N-N. It's two N's.
Two N's. That's wasteful.
Yeah, it is.
Wouldn't one be sufficient?
It would.
Huh.
It would.
He doesn't believe in global warming.
Of course not.
Yeah.
Glenn20 at blazetv.com.
Make sure you get that. Let's go to... Louis Gohmert.
An element of any of those obstructions you referenced requires a corrupt state of mind, correct?
Corrupt intent, correct.
Right. And if somebody knows they did not conspire with anybody from Russia to affect the election, and they see the big Justice Department with people that hate that person coming after them, and then a special counsel appointed who hires dozen or more people that hate that person, and he knows he's innocent, he's not corruptly acting in order to see that justice is done. What he's doing is not obstructing justice. He is pursuing justice, and the fact that you ran it out 2 years means you perpetuated injustice.
I take your question.
Gentleman's time has expired. The witness may answer the question.
I take your question.
Mm. What does that mean?
Gentleman from Florida.
Director Mueller,
this is like Mueller, everyone's just senile, just talking at each other.
I like pizza. What the hell does that mean? I take your question.
I guess it's just
I understand it.
He's not gonna. He doesn't respect. I guess the question is. I heard that you said that. Essentially, is what he's saying. The obstruction
investigation. I mean, isn't that a fiasco? Isn't that a good point though?
Yeah, seems like it.
I mean, I'd like to hear your.
And then in your report, you wrote about multiple calls from the president to White House counsel Don McGahn. And regarding the second call, you wrote, and I quote, McGahn recalled that the president was more direct, saying something like, call Rod, tell Rod that Mueller has conflicts and can't be the special counsel. McGahn recalled the president telling him, Mueller has to go and call me back when you do it. Director Mueller, did McGahn understand what the president was ordering him to do?
I direct you to what we have written in the report in terms of characterizing his feelings.
And in the report, it says, quote, McGahn understood.
Look, I should be eating pudding at this time. I don't usually think like this now. I think I wrote it down. Maybe you should read it. But it appears as though that's all you're doing is reading the report and asking me to leave my pudding time just to say, yeah, that's what the report said, I think.
The best of the Glenn Beck program. Like listening to this podcast? If you're not a subscriber, become one now on iTunes. And while you're there, do us a favor and rate the show.
Tom Fitton, the president of Judicial Watch, has just yesterday filed a House ethics complaint against Representative Ilhan Omar over potential immigration, marriage, tax, and student loan. Tom Fitton is the president of Judicial Watch. That's a public interest group that investigates and prosecutes government corruption. They have been around for a long time. Tom Fitton is their president at Judicial Watch, and they have just filed a House ethics complaint against Ilhan Omar. Welcome to the program, Tom.
Glenn, good to be with you. Thank you for having me on.
Thanks. We're doing a special tonight, and you know the mainstream media makes this into a conspiracy theory, or they say this is just crazy, you know, right wingers. But we've had the Minneapolis Star Tribune do an investigation themselves and verify the investigations by crazy right wingers, and they either can confirm about 60% of it. And the rest of it, they say they can't disprove without her participation. These are serious, serious crimes. What we're presenting tonight, I believe, is enough for an indictment and a call for a grand jury. I gather you're at the same place.
Yeah, there's certainly enough evidence to warrant a criminal investigation into what went on there. And, you know, Glenn, you've been looking at this, I'm sure, for as long as we have. It's kind of been this like low-grade fever type of corruption scandal.
Mm-hmm.
And when her hometown left-wing newspaper essentially puts its stamp of approval on the concerns that we've had for a long time about what was going on there, I think it's pretty hard now for the Justice Department to ignore it, Department of Homeland Security, the IRS, and, you know, there's a political process for handling ethics concerns related to this type of activity, which is what we're trying to pursue with the House. We're not naive as to the interest in Democrats in doing this, but
yeah.
We just got to try to make the system work. We got to try to remind these members they're not above the law and hold other members accountable if they're going to try to let them get away with it.
But I think that is, they do think they're above the law. I mean, we're talking perjury, immigration fraud, marriage fraud, yeah. state and yeah. federal tax fraud, federal student loan fraud. If it was you, Tom, or if it was me, how much trouble would we be in? How much jail time would we be looking at?
Yeah, this would be an easy prosecution if it were a regular individual involved in it. But this is a politically connected figure, now a member of Congress. I'm sure the Justice Department would be horrified of having to do something here. But that's the goal of filing this ethics complaint. Not only will it put pressure on the House to do something about it, but highlight the issue for the Justice Department to follow up.
So hang on just a second. You say it would be very easy. Why would it be very easy? It's complicated.
Well, it's not that complicated. So your listeners should know, it looks like Ms. Omar came into the United States using the name of another family.
The Omar family.
Her siblings, including her brother, went to the United Kingdom. It looks like she married her brother to give him some type of immigration benefits here in the United States. It's unclear how that plays out. So it's so bad that we can't be confident that, as we point out, it's not her. She's going by another name that's not her own as a member of Congress. It's extraordinary.
So it seems to be pretty well documented that this is what happened. What I can't figure out is, why did she come with her father, I think, her father and her sister, and go under the Omar family, with the other siblings going to the UK? Is it because the Omars could only take a certain number of people, or why didn't they take the whole family under the Omar name? Do you know?
Well, I'm not sure about that, but, you know, remember, this is, you know, these are refugees. They were in Kenya at the time. I mean, who knows what was going on? You know, maybe they could only bring three individuals in with under the other family's name, or her other members wanted to go to the United Kingdom for other reasons. You know, my guess is this is just the tip of the iceberg and probably not an unusual story in terms of a fraud associated with refugee settlements here in the United States.
So apparently DNA evidence shows that 80% of Somalis coming in are not related to the people they say they're related to.
Yeah. You know, and you know, that might be happening with a wink and a nod from authorities. The point is get the refugees in and the specifics of the names. However important it might be to national security and the rule of law aren't terribly relevant to helping the refugees.
But
if you're going to run for Congress, you got to make sure all your ducks in a row. And that hasn't happened yet.
It's amazing to me that under Obama, we couldn't take Christian refugees because we just didn't know. But if you say, and I believe this to be true, authorities look at this with a wink and a nod for Somalian Muslim refugees, but they don't have a wink and a nod for Christian Syrian or Iraqi refugees. There's something really toxic in our system.
Well, you remember the refugee program, the vetting of refugees was outsourced to third parties, UN officials and folks like that. So The United States just essentially accepted the word of the third-party vetters. That's what had been happening with the refugee program, which is why President Trump tried to reform it to get more security measures in place.
So let me go here. As you're looking at the fraud of the marriage, she marries her husband, let's call him Ahmed One. She marries Ahmed One, but she says she only marries him under a religious ceremony. Is there any documentation of those two being married legally at all the first time?
No, and I think, you know, some of the religious ceremonies were officiated by a Christian minister, which
that was Ahmed II.
Ahmed II.
Ahmed I was a religious Muslim to the Muslim tradition. Ahmed II was a legal and Christian ceremony done by a Christian pastor, right. Which I just, how does this woman who's wearing a burqa get married by a Christian? It doesn't make sense.
I encourage all your listeners to go to the Paroline blog so they can start creating their own genealogical charts and marriage charts for the congressman from Minnesota.
Yeah.
And this is why the Ethics Committee needs to get into this, because she was playing fast and loose with our marriage laws. She was filing IRS forms, pretending to be married to one person when in fact she was married to another.
She was.
She had to amend the form. She says that's good enough, but it may not be good enough. It wouldn't be good enough for most any other American.
No.
If you committed marriage fraud and you were just caught on an IRS form doing it.
No. And she also committed perjury on like 26 different, I think they're traffic violations and other violations that she and Ahmed II got. And they put their address down as the address of Ahmed I. So apparently they were all living together in some strange Three's Company kind of marriage with her children and both husbands. I mean, I don't even know what that is.
Well, you know, if you're engaged in marriage fraud, it makes perfect sense.
Correct.
You understand she's living with her brother. Her husband's there, too. On paper, the brother's married to her, but it's nothing substantive beyond the paper marriage for purposes of immigration and other purposes. Who knows what other purposes that have them get some benefits from that marriage. And on top of that, you have to wonder whether the house was defrauded in terms of descriptions about her name and other background material in terms of filings with the house. This is a... you know, there's criminal liability here potentially, but she could be removed from Congress if the House does its job here and concludes the evidence shows what we suggest it does.
But isn't she also, I mean, aren't these felonies?
Yep. You know, the U.S. attorney, and I don't know who the U.S. attorney in Minnesota is, but if he ain't looking at it, he ain't doing his job.
Tom, you've looked at this stuff and you've been in this business for a while. How comfortable are you with the Facebook? A lot of the stuff, we can't go any further because all we have are Facebook posts of her and Ahmed II, the timeline, et cetera, et cetera. They were deleted from her timelines. They were deleted from her and her alleged brother's posts. All of this have been erased, but we have access to those things. How comfortable are you that these are legitimately her and her family's?
Well, when I see our good friends at the Paroline blog, who I trust, even though the big media pretends you can't trust them, they were quite diligent in trying to ferret out all this information. And then you have the legacy media come in, the Minnesota newspaper come in, and essentially say, yeah, there are a lot of questions here, and she's acting like she has something to hide, and essentially repeats the reporting of our conservative friends there in Paroline. You know, as you point out, I've been doing this for a long time. You kind of, you know, people sometimes come to the wrong conclusions about publicly available documents. And I think the right conclusions about this is that something illegal took place. Scott Johnson, who runs Paroline Blog, did all the reporting on this. He was in the media the other day. He said he was 98% certain marriage fraud took place and 90% certain the marriage fraud was with his brother, with her brother. So something needs to be done here. So, and if she's innocent, then let the investigation figure that out.
Right.
Or, you know, let's have an investigation so that we can conclude one way or another whether we should move on.
It shouldn't be. And she should be.
You know, there is a presumption of evidence. You know, there is a presumption of innocence.
Right.
But there's enough evidence that any other citizen would be subject to a criminal investigation.
Yes. Tom, thank you so much. Tom Fitton from Judicial Watch. He is the president of that. We are doing a special on this tonight. This is serious allegations. And we want to explain the entire story to you. It's very difficult, especially when you're reading it or listening to it on the radio. It's very difficult to follow. We're going to make it really easy for you to follow tonight at 5 o'clock. And we urge you to watch it and share it with your friends. This is a dangerous situation with somebody who has, I believe, dangerous connections to CARE, high level connections to CARE, which is a offshoot of the Muslim Brotherhood, which is the parent organization that supports Hamas. Or is it Hezbollah? No, it's Hamas. So this is a dangerous situation that we need to clear up. You can subscribe to The Blaze now at blazetv.com/Glenn. If you use the promo code Glenn, we're going to give you $20 off today. So make sure you use Glenn20 as your promo code. Glenn20 as the promo code, and you'll get $20 off, 20% off now for your year subscription. That's tonight at 5 o'clock. Make sure you subscribe. One last note on this. The writer that we have been in touch with is David Steinberg, and he's done a lion's share of this. It's been a team effort, but he's done the lion's share of this. He's going to be with us in about 10 minutes. He was working for PJ Media at the time he began this. He gave this story to us about a week and a half ago. I've been in touch with him off and on over the last year, and he gave this story to me for The Blaze to run. We wanted to make sure that we did all of our due diligence, and Powerline beat us to it by a few hours. But we have Leon Wolf on, who is an attorney and our chief editor here at the Blaze, to go over what he did and what he went over, where he felt that there were any flaws. We, I guess, approved this story about 2 o'clock in the morning, and that was too late, so we didn't get the exclusive. But I want you to know, we didn't run it because we were wanting to make sure it was all buttoned up. We did approve the story because it is buttoned up. So we're taking this very, very seriously, and see this tonight at 5 o'clock, only on blazetv.com/Glenn, promo code Glenn20.
This is the best of the Glenn Beck program.
We have David Steinberg on with us now. David is a journalist. He has been following the Ilhan Omar case for how long, David? A year? Over a year?
I've been on this a little more than a year. Scott Johnson and Preah Sampson started this, got on it back in August of 2016.
And this is when nobody was on it. And it actually started, these claims started with a Somali blogger, if I'm not mistaken.
Yeah, there was a message board used by members of the local Minneapolis Somali community. And just in the hours after Ilhan first won a primary in August of 2016, they posted the first evidence that her marriage was a sham and that this person was actually her genetic brother, who she had married in 2009.
And what was the evidence then?
The evidence then was photographic, and it was also referencing, they specifically referenced when she got married to the person who she claims it was her husband at the time, this Ahmed Hirsi. Mm-hmm. And asked, he pointed out where we could dig up the documents, that the documents should be there.
And so,
Go ahead.
I talked to you about, I don't know, I think we started first talking about 8 months ago or so. And you were on this, and I know you were working with people in England to get more documentation, because half the family went to Virginia when they left Kenya. They're from Somalia. They were in a refugee camp in Kenya, and they were trying to get out to the West. And half the family went to Virginia with the Omar family, and that's when she allegedly changed her name to Omar. She's not an Omar, apparently. She is an Elmi. And the rest of her family, I think three others, went to England. Do you know why the family split at that point? Why didn't they all go to America with the Omars? Do you know?
Well, what we've heard from sources in the Somali community who were involved with this wave of refugee immigration to the U.S. at that time, were well aware of what people were doing to gain access to both the U.S. and the U.K. at that time. Several people gave us the same story about how Ilhan and her father arrived in the United States. They said there was this family, the Omars, which apparently already had a relative in the United States. So they were using the P3 refugee application program, family reunification, which allows you to apply as a refugee in a bit quicker fashion if you already have someone in the U.S., which legally is referred to as the anchor relative.
Mm-hmm.
Now, so that was the Omar family. It appeared they already have that. And this was the Omar family is within the same clan as Ilhan's father.
Okay.
And they had a discussion over in Kenya at the refugee camp. The Omar family allowed Ilhan's father, Ilhan's sister, and Ilhan to fraudulently apply as part of this P3 program as members of the Omar family.
And then Omar's brother and sister went over to the UK under the family name of Elmi.
Correct. That's what we also heard. They applied for asylum in the United Kingdom under their legal names, which was Ahmed Nur Said Elmi, Layla Nur Said Elmi, and Mohammed Nur Said Elmi. Those were three siblings of Ilhan's.
Okay, so why didn't those three, any idea why those three did not come under the Omar banner here in America? Was there a limit, or what do we know anything on that?
I don't have anything to verify what I've heard from sources as to why those three did not come. But what I have heard from sources is that there just simply wasn't a likelihood of getting that many people.
Okay.
All of them. Correct.
All right. So now we have Ahmed Elmi, apparently her brother, who she's later going to marry, living in Camden in the United Kingdom, and Leila Elmi, who also lived in Camden, at apparently the same address. Do we have, I know you talked to, or I know you have both of them in Camden. Do we have anything that shows that they're at the same address?
Yes, I have them at the same address, which I haven't published because I believe either they or relatives are still at the address. So I haven't published that, but I do have both of them at the same address. We have, I have verification that both from the school itself and from Ahmed Elmi's own social media that he attended the junior high school, which was in that neighborhood.
All right. So can you, if we don't publish or anything, if it's just for our eyes only, so I can verify this, can you send me the information that you have where that places them at the same address? So I can.
Oh, absolutely.
Because those are the only two questions that I had on this was, okay, I don't understand the split up other than it was not likely to get all of them in under the Omars. And the other is, do you have anything that is confirming that they were living at the same address? Because we do know that Leah Elmy is
Layla Elmy is
Omar's sister because of what evidence?
The evidence that I published was the problem is that he was a minor at the time.
Right.
So coming up with anything beyond address records legally is it's not something, you know, I've been able to do the whole investigation without requesting that anybody leak me something and put themselves in jeopardy.
Correct.
I didn't want to start. So that's been difficult. What I have been able to show, though, is he was enrolled at that school, that they lived at the same address, which I'm happy to forward to you.
No, but I'm asking about Layla. What are the connections there that we know they are sisters? Because once we know they're sisters and we have Ahmed as a youth living with her, we pretty much have that. I mean, that's pretty much done.
Right.
So
what I published as far as a connection showing Ilhan and Layla are sisters.
Mm-hmm.
Ilhan has on multiple occasions referred to her own father as a man named Nur Said. She's been photographed with him. She's called him Nur Said. She tweets his name was Nur Said. Everyone in the community knew him by that name. And his social media, he refers to himself as Nur Said. I pull up a marriage document from 1997 from Camden to Borough of London. And Layla Nur Said Elmy, when she got married in 1997, she lists her father on the application form as Nur Said Elmy. Now, at the age of we know his birth date of the one in the United States that is referred to, that Ilhan has referred to as her father. There is nobody else in either the United States or the United Kingdom named Nur Said Elmy that I can locate. There is certainly nobody close to the same birth date. Now, then I also published photographs which had originally appeared on Ilhan Omar's social media back in 2016, which she deleted once Scott Johnson first got on this case. The photograph I published was Layla Elmy, Ilhan Omar, and Nur Said, the father, all with their arms around each other on a family vacation in late 2011. I published another picture of Ilhan Omar visiting Layla Elmy in 2015 in London. And remarkably, Ilhan put a caption on the page, "I heart my sisters." And then I also published another social media post by someone who attended an event in late 2018 in Washington, D.C. with Ilhan Omar and Layla Elmy. He says, "I just had dinner with Ilhan Omar and her sister Layla Elmy." There is no rational, objective reason for him to incorrectly identify the person he had dinner with as Ilhan's sister Layla Elmy. Oh. Now, this event actually took place a couple hours after Ilhan had filed a police. She didn't file a report. I'm sorry about that. She had been in a taxi, and she claimed the next day that the taxi driver had harassed her and said threatened to pull her hijab off and called her a terrorist, etc. She said, "I was in the cab with my sister." She later, a few days later, filed a report with a D.C. Ethics Commission and the Taxi Cab Commission that stated, I FOIA'd the report, it stated, I was in the car with my sister. Now, we know she has testified here. This is a legal document. She could be punished for perjury for filing that falsely. That the person she was with, she identified as her sister. This person who we can place at that event, having dinner with her, said that sister was Layla Elmy.
Which makes her second husband her brother. And this is it's a very complex story, but it is very buttoned up. David, I salute you and all those who have risked so much and spent so much time on this story. I think this story is finally going to get its due. Hopefully, justice will be done. There is enough here to demand legal action to be taken as in form of an investigation. She should be presumed innocent until proven guilty. But if I were on a grand jury, there is more than enough to say, yes, prosecutors should look at investigating her and buttoning these things up. If these things are absolutely true, she should be compelled to testify and answer some of these questions. And these are it's not only fraud, it's forgery. I'm sorry. It's not only forgery and fraud. It is a felony. David, thank you so much. Appreciate it.
Thanks a lot, Glenn.
You bet. If you want to see all of this tonight, you just have to sign up for the Blaze TV. Sign up blazetv.com/Glenn. Use the promo code Glenn20, and you'll be able to get a 20% discount. You'll save $20 tonight. It's at 5 o'clock. We'll do it live today. Don't miss it. 5 o'clock, the true story of Ilhan Omar, as if that is her real name.
This is the best of the Glenn Beck program.
Justin Haskins is in studio with us. He's the executive editor of the Heartland Institute. And correct me if I'm wrong, Justin, didn't you and I first interact because you started, was it the Heartland Institute? You started this expose, if you will, or the exposing of socialism?
So, we started StoppingSocialism.com.
That's what it was.
That's right, StoppingSocialism.com. Go there now. Back in the summer of last year, so basically a year ago.
It was only a year ago?
Yeah, it was only a year ago. It was really spurred on by the rise of Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez and some of the stuff that I was seeing with my own generation. I'm a young guy.
Yeah.
Seeing people fall in love with socialism all over
crazy.
Again.
It's crazy. And you really have to not be able to think, you know, or you're in willful ignorance and there's no critical thinking engaged at all.
Not at all. And you talked about willful ignorance. I mean, it's sort of willful. But it's also, my generation grew up, I went to a public school in the liberal Northeast. Mm-hmm. And so I get it. I mean, I was indoctrinated like everybody else. I mean, it didn't take with me, but it took with just about everybody else around me. So I understand.
So how was it taught to you? How was socialism, you say indoctrinated. I grew up, I went into school, I was in school in the 70s, I graduated high school in 82. So I missed all of this indoctrination. How is it presented in school?
It's presented in school as capitalism is for greedy, heartless, terrible people. Mm-hmm. You're a terrible person if you're a capitalist.
Okay.
And socialism is basically charity. That's what it is. It's some kind of form of charity. And yeah, there are all these socialist governments all throughout history that screwed it up, but that's because they were authoritarian socialist governments.
Ah.
If they had only been democratic, then that would have solved all of their problems.
All democratic, at least at first. They all got in with a vote.
Yeah, that's right. That's how it always starts.
Yes,
see, it always starts with democracy, and then it devolves very quickly
into
tyranny.
Yes, right.
Yeah, they skipped over that part of the history lesson in school. But that's how it's always sold. It's, look, we're making progress. Things are getting better. We just need to put the right bureaucrats in place. We need to have the right.
Oh, my gosh.
I mean, it's the
this
same.
This is the end of Wilson's dream.
It is. It really is. Before I came here, actually, on the plane, I was re-listening to Liars. A great book, by the way.
Thank you very
much.
Thank you.
But, and when going over that history all over again, it's astounding how much this is just repeating itself
over
and over and over again.
Yeah.
It's the same story that was in the early 1900s and even late 1800s is playing out again 100 years later. Mm-hmm. We've learned nothing.
Mm-hmm.
We've learned absolutely nothing.
Bill Gates, Steve Jobs, Elon Musk, they will be known unless we turn the tide this time. They're going to be known as the robber barons of this era.
Yeah.
And look at the good that they have done.
Absolutely. I talk about this all the time with people. My wife is a doctor, so I know a lot of doctors. They love single payer healthcare. They're all academic doctors. Love it.
It's crazy.
It is, because I tell them all the time, look, who do you think they're coming for first? Who do you think is going to be the first scapegoat when things start to go wrong, when costs are too high? You guys are all making $500, $600, $700,000 a year, the surgeons and stuff like that. Do you think that they're just going to let you do this forever? Of course not. Do you think they care that you have $500,000 in student loan debt and all of this stuff?
No, they'll forgive it, and you have to work for them.
That's right, and then you work for them at whatever price they pay.
Mm-hmm.
So that is absolutely going to come. They're going to be demonized too. There are all sorts of – this is how socialism always plays out. There is always – A shifting group of people who become, if only we could get rid of them, or if only we could somehow put the chains on them.
Yes.
They're the problem, not us, them.
Right.
And it shifts, because as soon as they put the chains on one group, that doesn't work. They have to put the chains on another group.
Correct.
And it goes back and forth over and over and over.
And if you know this, I'm a watch collector, and I love the story of one of them is Glashütte, and the other is Alenons and Son. And these were really great watches that were made in Germany until the Soviet Union took over. And all of the watchmakers fled, and they went to the West. Okay, so they all went to Switzerland, and they all started making watches there. Soon as the wall came down, they went back to those areas, and now they're making these, you know, timeless brands again. But the funny part about this is that is why the Russians had a hard time keeping time, literally keeping time. They killed anybody who knew who was a watchmaker, because they were part of the, you know, they were part of the upper crust that were crushing the masses. And so they left, and they killed the ones who didn't. And forever, they had a hard time just making a watch.
Yeah, that's amazing. We've seen this especially in China. I mean, China had a remarkable history of elevating one group of people to being this special class of people, and then killing them all off and imprisoning them because they're the problem.
Mm-hmm.
And then the educated people were the problem. So then we have to imprison all of them, and we have to kill them, and we have to get them out of the way. And then it was the farmers who were the problem.
Yes.
And then it was back to the educated people.
Correct.
It's the same, because it can never be them. It can never be the people in
Correct.
Power.
Or the ideas.
Right.
You can never impugn the ideas.
Exactly.
So a good example of this is the people in power can always do what they have to do, but they never allow that to happen anyplace else. And let me give you an example. Bernie Sanders, $15 an hour. Okay. Everybody has to do it. And you say, Bernie, it doesn't work. What will happen is people will either reduce the hours that those people work, which will hurt them, or they will they'll fire people. Tell me the story about Bernie Sanders.
This is, I think, my favorite story of this year. I love this story. So Bernie Sanders, a socialist,
mm-hmm.
running around the country telling everybody it's not just a good idea to have a $15 minimum wage, but it is immoral if you don't. You're
mm-hmm.
exploiting people who do not earn $15 an hour. While he's doing this, it turns out, he's not paying his own lowest wage workers $15 an hour. He's making them work 60 hours a week for about $13 an hour, okay? Which is just astounding in and of itself. But the best part is
60 hours?
Yes, 60 hours.
Slave shop.
Right, 60 hours. The best part is, though, that he the workers who are unionized, by the way, the campaign workers are unionized. They get together and they complain and they say, hey, this isn't fair. I thought this was a living wage. We're not getting paid a living wage, $15 an hour. So they go to the bosses, which is now the socialist presidential candidate is now the boss negotiating with a socialist union in a presidential campaign, which is amazing. And they say, hey, we need more money. Give us more money. And they say, all right, we'll give you more money. But only if you're willing to take a cut on your health care benefits. You have to contribute more to your healthcare. That's the only way we'll give you the pay raise. Well, wait a minute. I thought healthcare was a human right. Isn't healthcare a human right? So now you have Bernie Sanders, a socialist, exploiting his own workers. When they complain, he then tries to take away their human rights. This is amazing. I mean, this is the best story. And then it gets even better. Because finally they come to a resolution.
I love his passion.
Finally comes to a resolution. They say, all right, guys, we'll settle on, it amounts to basically $16 an hour. And we're not going to cut your health care benefits because the media found out, which is a whole other thing. The media finds out, right? So then the next day, basically, Rashida Tlaib, another socialist from Michigan, a member of the Democratic Socialists of America, she comes out and says, you know what? $15, that's not enough. You got to pay $20 for a minimum wage. $15 was good before when we started all this, but now we need $20. $20. So Bernie Sanders, according to Rashida Tlaib and other socialists, is still exploiting his own workers.
I love that. And with the candidates and the way the socialists are working now, it's almost like an auction. I got 15, 15. Do I hear 20, 20, 20, 20, 22. Do I hear 22, 22. Thank you, ma'am. Do I hear 25? I mean, it is just an auction on who is who can be the highest bidder. And the results are the same. Did he not have to reduce everybody? And some people quit. I believe some people were fired, were they not? Or their hours were reduced.
The end result was, we're only going to make you work 50 hours. And originally, they wanted him to work 6 days a week. They ended up settling on, well, we're working 50 hours, and we'll pay you a salary. So he's not, but you're not going to get what you wanted initially. I'm sorry, we just don't have enough money. So we're going to have to cut hours. We're going to have to maybe cut staff.
How is it that people don't see, or is it just willful blindness?
I think that people, and I think we saw this with Barack Obama, and I think you see it a little bit with Bernie Sanders, maybe not quite as passionately, but people desperately want to believe in this guy. They want to believe that there is some alternative answer that's going to fix all of our problems, and that he represents that, that he's somehow above it all, which we saw that with Barack Obama. People wanted to believe it. They wanted to, even when all the facts pointed to something else, they said, I want to believe in this guy. And I think that there are a lot of people on the left who want to believe in Bernie Sanders, even when he's, according to his own logic, exploiting his own workers and denying them human rights.
So
that's ridiculous.
You have Elizabeth Warren now at times in some polls beating Bernie Sanders. Let me take a quick break, and then I want to talk to you about the socialism of Elizabeth Warren. And how do you think this is going to play out? They have a mutually assured destruction pact going on. Don't say anything because we'll just kill each other. And I want to get your advice on, or your thoughts on how you think this is going to play out, because Bernie Sanders is not going to be the candidate, just not going to be the candidate. But you're smiling at me. Maybe you know something I don't know.
The Blaze Radio Network. On demand.